Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement on the show today. And we're taking a deeper dive into heating, cooling, and ventilating with our three guests. Chad Spade back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. It's always great to be here.
Joining him today from All Comfort Services in Madison are Steve Schultz and Kendall Richards. Steve is the field coach, has 25 years of experience. Steve, welcome.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks so much for being with us. Kendall Richards is the president of the business for the past 15 years, and he's with us as well. Kendall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have all three of you with us today. As you think about your heating or cooling or ventilation systems, I hope you will join in. Maybe you're concerned about air quality in your home. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Kendall, let's just start with you. Tell us about your company.
Well, we've been in business for about 50 years. We do heating and cooling. In the last 15 to 20, we've been doing plumbing electric. We just tried to meet our customers' needs, and there was a need for a good service and replacement company on the plumbing and the electrical side, and that's how we got into those lines of business.
Steve, what do you do as a field coach?
Well, working with all of the technicians on the heating, cooling, as well as the plumbing and electrical, and working with them both on the training perspective of how we greet, meet, how we do the service calls, making sure that the customers are satisfied, and just following up with them, do a lot of the training meetings with all of the technicians.
Yeah. Chad, let's turn to you. What kinds of HVAC problems do you see a lot of in the homes you work in?
Yeah, so it's interesting, Larry. Houses 100 that were built 100 years ago are very leaky homes that get a lot of fresh air, not by design, but definitely just by accident. And so those homes are very drafty. We tend to see, they're more expensive to heat and cool. And then when we retrofit those homes and we tighten them up and make them more energy efficient, then we can start to see other issues, condensation on windows, and less air exchange. And so as we, and then of course, as homes are newer and they've been built more recently, there's been a progression of them becoming tighter and tighter and more energy efficient. But then there are important concerns about fresh air so that we can be healthy in our homes and, to control our environment, in all the ways we want to do it. There's heating and cooling, but also humidity, and of course, just, having fresh air. So it's something that we seem to talk about in some manner with almost every client. Sometimes it's a burning issue. They have particular needs. And then other times, it's just something that we have to make sure we're doing thoughtfully in conjunction with whatever renovation we might be undertaking.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about healthy indoor air for a minute. Maybe Steve, what do you consider to be a healthy indoor air, and how do you test it?
Well, it's interesting because obviously we're in a different world today than we were even a year ago, but healthy indoor air is been a big part of all of our lives, I think, for a long time. And we're just starting to really take benefit of some of the things that have been around a long time. So there are ways to monitor the air. They've got monitors you can put in to see what type of particulate and how much CO, CO2, that type of thing are in the air. But a lot of times it's pretty easily recognized. We train our technicians to go in and look at what's existing. We ask good open-ended questions to find out what type of needs customers have, whether there's allergies or moisture concerns, that type of thing. And there's just a lot of different products out there that really help to improve the indoor air quality. And our indoor air quality, as a rule in homes, is not as good as the quality of air that's outside the home. So bringing some of that fresh air in, but controlling how we bring that fresh air in is really critical and to improve that air, indoor air quality.
Yeah, this time of the year, or just in the last month or two, you wouldn't be opening up your windows much to let in the fresh air. That is for sure. So there's other ways to do it, as you're saying. What are your thoughts on room air cleaners? Anything on that?
We really like to lean on the central heating and cooling system to do the filtration. The blower motors are more efficient. We can run a lot more air through them than the room ones. I think as they pick up particulate and take some of that stuff out of the air, those filter changes are easier to maintain. I really haven't looked at the individual room ones that closely, but we have great products in the industry that will take care of the whole home. If you're looking at a home that maybe has some hydronics or maybe doesn't have a forced air system, that's probably a good fit. But anybody that has a central heating system with a ducted system, I would recommend doing the whole home type filtration.
Chad, it looks like you were agreeing there. You were nodding your head in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting with with COVID and everyone's heightened awareness of the importance of dealing with airborne threats and contaminants in the air. It's brought to everyone's attention some of those technologies that I think Steve's alluding to. So, for example, there is a bipolar ionization that can be used sometimes to essentially charge the particles in the air. I know Steve can speak to that. That's one of the technologies. And sometimes, of course, that's a technology that's incorporated into one of those room units. But those inexpensive room units can, you know, have some problems. There was a time when they were getting recalled for producing ozone, which is a very unhealthy thing to produce in our living spaces, not to mention for health. Not to mention some environmental concerns. And then, of course, there are some, really good filters that are out there, both for a room unit or for your central system. But, a filter is only good if you keep it clean. And so maintaining the equipment that you use, whatever it is really important. And, that's something that we will often talk to our homeowners about. You know, you can't just put it in once and forget about it for 20 years. So,
yeah. Well, you know, in my own case, my furnace filters at home, I usually buy an entire box of them. And then every month I go down and I change them and I write down the date right on that box that they all came in. So, it kind of keeps me, I don't know, is that a good system? It kind of helps me keep track.
Well, that's a really good system, Larry. I mean, it's good for you to have that system down where you have those there and you're doing it monthly and recording it. We find a lot of customers don't do that. So you're way ahead of the curve. We would look at, you know, again, if somebody's looking at particular needs, we would look at maybe wider filters, something that's 4 or 5 inches wider, a lot more filter area to capture smaller particulate and take some of those things, undesirables, out of the air that are there. So, but I like the idea that you're changing it every month. That's fantastic. And keeping record, that's a really good start.
You know, somebody asked me about the filters and going to, you know, they have, my neighbor's got, you know, a, a filter area where you plug it in that is only, you know, wide enough to take the thinner ones. And how big a pain is it to set it up so you could have wider filters? And then what about the motor? Does it require a different kind of blower motor or whatever to keep that air going with a denser pack like that?
That's a great question, Larry. Typically we would come out and we'd look at the ductwork and look at the blower configuration and find out what's the best fit for that. It would require some sheet metal work to fit that filter in. And a lot of the filters have different ability to move air through them and still capture the particulates and things we want to capture. So we always like to look at a filtration system that's going to have a lot better airflow through it and makes it easier on the motor. Typically, we don't have to change anything on the motor, but we do like to look at that and make sure. And again, there are better filters on the system or in the market that will definitely allow more airflow, better airflow through the system while still doing the job we want it to do.
Yeah. Is there something to look for on the package, or maybe Chad or Steve, is something that you look for when you're looking at filters? Is here's one that'll do a good job, but maybe it's not going to be plugging up your system as you were talking about?
Yeah, so the MERV, there's a MERV rating on most filters, and it's a measure of resistance, how much it can collect. The higher the MERV rating, the more efficient it is, the smaller particulate, the better job it's going to do. We install a lot of 13 to 16 MERVs, and those are real efficient systems. A lot of the standard filters out there might be a MERV of 3 or 4. So the higher the number, the better the rating, the smaller particulate it's going to capture.
We have every one of our lines filled, and let's go to the phones. Tony in Egg Harbor, it's your turn. Hi, Tony. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. So this will be a shoemaker with no shoes phone call. I've been a commercial industrial mechanical contractor for 45 years, and I've never taken my own ventilation too seriously. So this is going to be my summer. I have a three-ton and a 3.5-ton conventional condensing furnace with an outdoor condensing unit, R22, and the ducts leak like a sieve, so I'm going to do an aero seal on the ductwork this spring to seal all the cracks in the ductwork. But on the cooling and heating side, I'm betwixt and between. I'm concerned that there's going to be an influx in LP prices, so I'm going to convert to a heat pump but keep my LP furnaces as a backup. And the two forms of heat pumps that I've been looking at is a conventional air-to-air heat pump. It's a heat recovery unit, so I could actually do both furnaces with one condensing unit and heat the domestic hot water and the pool and all those good things. The other one is, and this one's really intriguing, it's a air-to-water source heat pump that actually is a self-contained outdoor chiller boiler, and then instead of running refrigeration pipe, you run PEX tubing to the condensing unit, and then you have water coils in your duct. I wonder if the guests have any information or feelings about this approach.
Well, what do you think? Steve, I'll turn to you first, and then maybe Chad.
Yeah, air-to-airs have been around quite a while. There was a movement at one point thinking that in the upper, you know, these upper climates, northern climates, maybe they weren't as good as we want them to be, but they've really gotten better. And we see quite a movement to air-to-air. And I think it's a good fit to do dual fuel where you can set your parameters where you want when you think based on electric costs and gas costs where you want to kick in your gas furnaces. The air-to-water have not been around in the U.S. as long. There's only a few manufacturers that have them out. They have been in Europe and other areas, and I think that's a great product. It will like you said, heat and chill. So you could actually do some cooling with it as well. There are some projects out there, as long as you keep that water temperature and you're monitoring your dew point, you're not getting condensation where you don't want it, it will do a really nice job. From an efficiency standpoint, to just put that water coil in the forced air furnace ductwork, I don't know that you're going to gain a lot efficiency-wise there, but over the refrigerant style, but they are becoming more and more available. And we see more in homes where they don't have, again, the ductwork and things like that, and they want to try to do something hydronically. The air-to-water gets us into a hydronic market that we haven't been in before in the U.S.
Yeah. Chad, that sounds, you're nodding again in agreement there.
Yep, absolutely. And I, the caller mentioned, you know, keeping the old LP system for a backup and redundancy. And that's always something to consider. And we always like to have that conversation with a homeowner, if it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Three guests for you today on the show as we talk home improvement, heating, ventilating, and cooling with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, Steve Schultz, and Kendall Richards. Steve is the field coach at All Comfort Services, 25 years experience. Kendall Richards, president of All Comfort Services, and been there in that position for the past 15 years. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you, my friends, are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement, heating, ventilating, and cooling with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build and Steve Schultz and Kendall Richards, who are with All Comfort Services of Madison. Been doing it for a long, long time. It's great to have them with us. Callers online, so let's take another call. Abby in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Abby.
Hi, Larry. We have hot water heat in our home, and we need to replace the boiler. It's fueled by natural gas. And I've been concerned about making a good decision for the environment. And we also have a well in our yard that once a workman said, oh, no, don't fill that in. You might be able to use it for geothermal heat. And I don't have the first clue about geothermal heat, but what I've read online said it really isn't all that cost effective for an individual residential home. And I guess I want to know your expert's opinion on that. Is it worth looking into? We live in Appleton. It's a 1950s ranch, 3-bedroom, average size. I think it's 1,700 square feet home. Is that is geothermal a viable option? Does having a well make that any more cost effective?
So, do you mind if I jump in, Larry?
Yeah, no, go ahead, Steve.
Okay. So, geothermal is and can be very effective. In your case, where they're suggesting you use well water, you're relying on a pump to move that water through the geothermal heat pump. That's going to be your fuel, if you will, your source of energy. And so they'll be either extracting or rejecting heat to that well water. And the cost of pumping that is going to be a big part of your cost of operation. It's a lot less expensive up front to do it that way. They call it a pump and dump, where they're taking well water and running it through the heat pump and then discharging it. But you're going to be going through a lot of water. You're going to pull a lot of water out of that well, and you need a place to discharge that water too. So you've got some real good people up in that area. I would suggest calling some of the local contractors and talking to them. A lot of the geothermal heat pumps that I'm familiar with are more of a ground loop, where we actually run a loop and it's a closed loop. We don't run the fresh water through. So we're continuing to use the same water and cost more up front, but it is a little bit more efficient once it's installed.
Yeah. Chad, have you had that experience as well? I know you've worked with homes in that area.
We have, and I mean, we have some clients with systems, and I think you have a system in your own home, Larry, because you've talked about it. And But I do think that it is true, as the caller suggests, that for a single family residence, it is very expensive to put in that sort of a system. Whereas when you are looking at a larger facility, the payback on, you know, the energy savings, I think, you know, it looks a lot better on paper. I'm a big fan of geothermal in larger projects. It's just not the sort of project that our company does. Yet I will say that I have rarely talked to a homeowner that has a system that isn't happy with it. I was just over at a good client's house yesterday who has had a geothermal system for a couple of decades, and they love their system. So,
yeah. Well, they had to sink 4 150-foot holes in my driveway to get my setup, and it was expensive, but it's worked out. And so, Abby, it's certainly worth looking at. You want to go to somebody who knows what they're doing. I think somebody with experience. I think Steve and Chad and Kendall would all agree with that. But do your homework, and good luck. Thank you for calling. You can finally have some open lines. You can get on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Dennis in Two Rivers has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Dennis, hi.
Hi, thank you. Okay, I have a gas-fired furnace with an April air unit on it and a central air conditioning unit connected. Now, I'm wondering if I add a UV system or light to cut down on microbes and allergens, would I have to add another circuit to my circuit breaker box, or could it be attached to the same circuit as everything else?
Hmm. Steve, I suppose that would depend.
Well, and there's a lot of options out there. So we do install a lot of the UVC lights. And actually what we carry, we've got a good partner in New Caledon and their systems. We've got 24 volt. We've got 120 volt. So we can look at the system and decide where we want to put it, how we're going to put it in there. We can typically tie it right in with the furnace. So we'd like to, if we can, we'd like to get it right underneath the air conditioning coil to kill the mold and things that are building up on that coil. And we're using the UVC, like I said, no ozone. But typically you can tie it right into the furnace circuit. Shouldn't be an issue.
All right. There you go, Dennis. Thanks for calling. Dave in Whitewater, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a furnace that's going to be 22 years old. It's an oil forced air furnace. It's been working fine. It's serviced about every couple of years. I was wondering the lifespan. I don't want to break down in the middle of winter, so when do you replace a furnace? I mean, if it's working fine, you just replace it? Of time.
I had one just like yours, Dave, and it quit in January of 1 year, a long time ago. It was not fun at all, I can tell you that. Exactly the same kind of situation. Steve, what do you think?
Well, furnaces are a lot like cars. They don't break down when they're sitting in the garage, you know, so they're going to take a toll. It's going to probably go out on you when you don't want it to. So I would urge you to, you know, start looking, find a good contractor that you're comfortable with, talk to them a little bit, start working on a budget, and be prepared. If you do want to wait until it goes out, at least you're going to have your homework done and you'll be ready to go. You don't want to wait till the last second, because you might be at the mercy of whoever's not busy at the time, and they're probably not busy for a reason. And so you don't want to be caught.
Yeah, that's for sure. I well remember because it was a weekend when the furnace went out. And so the expense of having somebody come on a Sunday is pretty darn high for sure. Chad, any other comments from you?
It's just a reminder of the importance of annual inspection on a furnace. And so If the caller has a good, reputable contractor that can inspect that unit, you know, that's probably the best way. I mean, it's not often, you know, predicted when something's going to fail, but there are signs that can be detected that increase the likelihood of failure. And if those are seen and you have a contractor you trust to give you good feedback on that, you know, that's the best way, I think, to prepare for that moment.
And just thinking about it, in my own situation, that was a while back, but the difference anymore in the efficiency of furnaces compared to 22 years ago, you're going to notice, I think, some immediate savings on your heating bill. Wouldn't you agree with that, Chad?
Probably. Yeah, though the one thing I'll say, and I know Steve can speak to this, I mean, there for, oh, maybe 30 years now, some really high efficiency equipment has been out there on the market. And so a lot depends on what, you know, what you've got and how efficient that is. And any system with a blower, for example, you know, if your blower has a direct current motor, you know, that's a much more efficient system for distributing air. And, you know, if you can upgrade to that, no matter what your fuel is for heat, that makes a big difference in improving the efficiency of the system when it's operating. And it allows you to utilize the fan, even when you're not heating or cooling the air, to do the sorts of air exchange and filtration that we've talked a lot about today. You know, yeah. and you can do it much more cost effectively. I would say whenever you upgrade, definitely look at that feature.
Yeah, excellent points. Dave, thank you. Joanne in Neshkoro, your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Well, I have a geothermal system. My old house burned down, so I built a new one. The new one is Energy Star tight, but I put geothermal in. But I live in the country, and so they could do a field, you know, laying that's where I get my water there. The only problem is I live on sand, and I guess the sand ground doesn't get as warm as, you know, so far down as regular does. But anyhow, it works really well. You don't have a source of heat. You can go back up to, you know, the heat comes slowly, but it's a lot cheaper than propane, for instance. And air conditioning, my friends with regular air conditioning complain about the high price, and air conditioning is, well, not exactly free, but it certainly doesn't take as much electricity as regular air conditioning does, so I'm well pleased with mine. Works fine, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Joanne. I would second your motion on the air conditioning. It is really, I can keep it as cool as I like and in the summertime, and the costs are negligible compared to a normal system, for sure. Well, thank you for that. Let's go to Kate in Ferryville. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, my husband and I bought an old house built around 1900, big frame farmhouse type house. And we have an oil burning furnace in the basement, and that heats the first floor. Now, the second floor has no heat source whatsoever. It looks like at one time maybe it had radiators, but that's all gone. Everything, all the space that we're going to live in is on the first floor. Bathroom, bedroom, rooms. The second floor is only going to be for when family comes to visit. So what we're wondering is it better to go with a whole house heating cooling system, or is it better to get a gas furnace for the downstairs and then do the upstairs separately? We do have an attic space with plenty of room.
Okay, some things to consider. Chad, you want to start with you and then go to Steve? Or? Well,
so just quick question for Kate. Was it the first floor that is served by the current heating system, you said?
there aren't even floor registers upstairs to carry the heat up. There's just no heating up there.
And has anything ever been done to improve, or, you know, I assume it's a 100-year-old home. It's drafty. And has anything been done to improve the comfort from an air sealing and insulation standpoint?
Well, the gentleman we bought it from was 93. And I don't think anybody had even been upstairs from the decor up there since maybe 1950. So,
okay.
I mean, it's just completely left to its own devices for all those years.
Okay. I mean, my thought would be, because I know Steve will be able to speak to, you know, some potential upgrades and equipment. And I guess I'll speak to it more from the whole house renovation perspective. First off, how badly do you want your family to come and visit and settle in for a number of weeks? Because that would be part of the calculus. And I guess I'm being facetious a little bit, but, you know, you could make it pretty comfortable up there probably by looking into some insulation and air sealing upgrades that would also have the benefit of reducing your energy bill with whatever equipment you have, and also making the house more comfortable for you year round. So I might be inclined to consider that as a first step if you're interested in that. But then as far as heating equipment goes, I'll let Steve speak to that.
Yeah, Steve?
Yeah, Chad, you're right on. And, you know, we always want to take care of that envelope. That insulating air sealing is a one-time cost. Your utility bill is a monthly bill. It's never going to end. So if we can take care of the envelope, tighten things up, that's always the best art. And it will affect the sizing of the equipment that we're putting in. So if we're looking at whether it's another gas furnace up in the attic and ducting down to those spaces, I'd probably be more inclined to look at some mini splits and maybe not penetrate that ceiling and you know, change where the envelope is. But there are a lot of nice options. If you're looking at one or two rooms, some mini splits do a really nice job, and you can supplement those with some other sources of heat as well if you want. But if there's transfer grills there, again, depending on privacy and things like that, a lot of that heat from the first floor will probably get up there and help them. So maybe cooling is as much of a need as heating.
Yeah. When you say mini split, what are you referring to there?
So a lot of people are familiar with them. They maybe they've seen them in churches or whatever, but it's a small wall hung evaporator coil that just goes on the wall, and then you run your line set out to an outdoor unit, looks like a more of a smaller conventional air conditioning system, and it does the heating and cooling. It's a heat pump, and you can get quite a bit of heat out of it even in the cooler temperatures. And if it were supplementing just a few rooms, it's a really nice fit.
Oh, excellent. Well, there you go, Kate, some things to consider. Thank you so much for calling. Doug in Mount Horeb, it's your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, thanks for an educational program. I have an old furnace that I'm going to be replacing here in the next year or two. The furnace is located in an open area that's nicely finished off, but the furnace stands in that open area. The area has an art studio in it, and we don't want to close the furnace off. We want to keep it as an open area. So I'd like to replace it with a variable speed blower furnace so that it doesn't make a lot of noise. My question is, can you get variable speed furnaces that still are able to operate when you want them to, like the old style like we have, where you get a blast of heat and then it turns off, and you get a blast of heat and it turns off, because we would like to have those periods of silence when we want them, as opposed to having the blower humming in the background all the time. And I don't know if there is an option like that on those furnaces, but I'd like to get one. And I have checked various sources, Consumer Reports and other places on the web that rate furnaces, and I've never found the option on there, although I have found recommendations for different brands, which, of course, are all different depending on who you listen to. So that's my question.
Okay. Steve, let's go to you.
Yeah, so you certainly can still operate the furnace just like you are now with the thermostat, and the thermostat would have the fan switch. If you wanted to run the fan continually, you could. But if you just want it to cycle when you're needing heat or cooling, it would do that. So that's really a thermostat function. I would say that the higher-end furnaces are really quieter, much quieter than we used to see. They've done a better job with the cabinetry. And again, variable speed blowers are quieter. One thing I've found personally is actually leaving the fan on continually. You don't get that whoosh of air and the noise of starting from nothing to something. So I would probably have you, you know, maybe talk to some of your local guys and go out and listen to some systems and see. But there should be, if you dig deep enough, there's probably decibel ratings that you can find out on the equipment. But with that said, everything, that's a lab setting. You put that same system in your home, it's going to be a little different than in a lab. So ductwork and how everything's tied together all has something to do with that noise. So,
yeah, there you go. Thank you so much, Doug, for calling. John in Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi there. Hey, I got two furnaces in my house, the big house, and they're not that old, 10 years old, high efficiency. And I recently had the guy come out and, change the filters and turn up the furnace. And then after he left, both of them give off a odor that my wife and I are like, wow, never smelled this before. Kind of a musty metal smelling smell. And we have those, high efficiency filters. God, I can't think. April Air. Anyway, mm-hmm. the guy came back, but, he said when it kicks in, you don't smell it. But then when it goes up to the next speed, then it starts pushing more air through. And man, sitting there watching TV, the smell's powerful. But he can't figure it out. He just told me, take the filter, the April Air out and see what happens. Anyway, got any ideas about smells? And should he have done more when he – does it cost more to clean the furnace? Anyway, that's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Steve, let's go to you.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on there, but good maintenance, there is a lot involved. We would suggest maybe looking a little deeper. That type of a smell, we might see that when you first fire up your furnace in the fall after it's been sitting there and you've got all summer with air conditioning and things, something may have collected on the heat exchanger, and now you fire it up and you're heating that heat exchanger up pretty high temp. And we would get that, or maybe even on a brand new install, you might get just a little bit because it's a new product, but unusual to hear that you're getting it now at this late in the season. So I'm a little concerned. I guess I'm not sure what would be producing that. I really don't have a good answer for you, but maybe digging a little deeper, maybe going a little further with the maintenance is a good idea.
Yeah. Chad, anything on your radar? No.
Yeah, I'm not. I think Steve kind of covered it there. I forget who mentioned the possibility of it. Did something get into the ductwork or and then get onto the filter? But the filter was removed, so I'm not sure what to make of it. But that might be another thing to look at. I'm generally not a huge advocate for duct cleaning. A good operating system has good filtration and air movement, and unless you've maybe had some renovation work or something where the contractor wasn't mindful of keeping the ducts clean during the project, then it might make sense. But I would be concerned that something else might be going on to have that odor.
Yeah, you might want to get a second opinion and get somebody else out to take a look and see what they could find. Yeah. John, good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Talking heating and air conditioning and ventilating on the show today with our three guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, and Steve Schultz, and Kendall Richards, who are with All Comfort Services in Madison. Great to have them with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home improvement today, taking a look at heating, cooling, and ventilating with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Steve Schultz and Kendall Richards of All Comfort Services in Madison. Great to have them with us. Join in with your questions. Our lines are all filled and lots of emails as well. So let's go back to the phones and to Tom in Viroqua. Tom, hello.
Yes, good morning. I want to follow up on the earlier discussion of installing UVC lights in the furnace cabinet to sterilize units there. I believe it was Steve said most often they are installed near the air conditioning coil, and that certainly makes sense if you're concerned with things like Legionnaires or something like that, but in the time of COVID, if you've got a good filter on the furnace, that filter is going to be capturing most of the spores of the COVID virus, where they can actually, in my understanding, they can sit there for a long time in a dormant stage and still be viable. Seems to me, for this purpose, a more logical location would be upstream from the filter itself, so that the UV light is impinging on the filter fabric and all the COVID spores that have collected there. Any of your guests know of this application?
Hmm. Well, Steve, let's go back to you for that.
Yeah. So my own home, I actually have one on the return air as well. So it's capturing a little bit of that. You have to be careful. Depending on the filter, and if you've got a humidifier there, some of the plastics don't do well with that UVC light on them. You can get some deterioration, so you just have to be a little careful on what it's exposing itself to. With our UVC, we don't want anything visible to the eye. So if you're changing filters, you'd want to unplug that so that you're not going to be exposed to that. Little different than what you see with some of the wands and different things that are out there right now. So I think you certainly could put one there. You just want to be careful on how you use it and your exposure to it as well.
Yeah, makes good sense. Tom, thank you. Well, let's see, Richard in New York City. Hi, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Larry?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yeah, how you doing, Larry?
I'm doing just fine. What's on your mind?
A lot. That's the problem. I'm fishing out in the Outer Banks, and but I have a simple question. It's I got a simple furnace. It's a four-seer furnace, and I want to ask your expert what you have to do to make. I put new windows in the house. And I want to know what you have to do after that to try to make them more efficient.
Okay. Chad, maybe go to you first.
I'm not sure I understand the question. If we talk about replacing windows, was it connected to the furnace? I didn't follow.
No,
that.
I think it was making the windows. What else can Richard do to make the home more efficient and to improve efficiency? He's done the windows, and now he's wondering what else could he do.
Sure. So, in the Wisconsin market, and I'm sure in many other states as well, there are folks that can come in and do an energy audit of your home, which would include potentially a blower door test. And if you haven't had that done yet, I would recommend that, because that's the best way to really figure out how your building is functioning, to find out if there are good opportunities to air seal in places that are not performing as they should in the thermal envelope, and then potentially to add insulation as well. Typically, when we're looking at a cost benefit for improving a home, air sealing and insulating are the most effective, quickest payback for return on investment and improving your comfort. And then second to that is often replacing or upgrading your HVAC system, particularly if you have a more inefficient or poorly installed equipment. So, you know, those do tend to be the two areas. And then windows are often a third option. From a payback perspective, even really old windows, you're probably only going to double the efficiency of that hole in the wall, because a window is a hole in the wall. And the highest performing windows tend to have an R value of about 4, maybe 5, compared to your wall, which should have an R value of anywhere from, say, 13 to 25, depending on the, you know, way your house is constructed. So I guess that's what I would recommend. You know, start with the envelope.
Yeah. And an energy audit, it's really interesting when you have one done to see. It's always a little surprising when you find out where the air leaks are coming from. Sometimes it's like, what?
Right.
From there?
That's true. That's true. And even though, you know, we walk into home, we've been doing these audits now for so many years that we've kind of figured out what's likely to be the problem if a house hasn't had this retrofit work done. And yet, if you don't test, you don't know. And sometimes we still find that even though we thought certain things were going to be the big problem, there are actually other parts of the house that are contributing, you know, to the air leakage that we wouldn't have predicted. So
good luck, Richard. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Kenneth in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a colonial house that built in 1978, which is an unusual one in that it has all electric. The heat is in the ceilings. I believe it's called a Mears. Mears is the manufacturer of this heating system, and most every room on the first, it's a two-story, all the rooms have a rheostat. Now, is that infrared heat, or is that what they call something else?
I would call that radiant heat, so it's just an electric source, but you're heating radiantly through that ceiling or wall space, and you'll notice that your surfaces are warm, air is getting heat through convection and conduction, but it's really a radiant source, a radiant type of heat.
Is it expensive, Kenneth?
Yes, I guess. It is expensive. Second thing, is this house a candidate then, being all electric, for having some solar panels put up on it to help cut the electric bill?
I would think so, Chad.
Well, you know, there the issue is really going to have more to do with the site. And, for example, you know, do you have a roof that faces in a southerly or southeast or southwestern direction? And is it, you know, unobstructed from shade, from trees? You know, if not that, there may be someplace in the yard where a solar array could be installed either on a pole or on another building, an outbuilding, I would definitely encourage you to look into that, because you certainly, I've got a solar array on my my business, which produces pretty close to 100% of our electrical demand year round. And, you know, we turn the meter backwards in the, late spring and early fall. And in the summer, it's pretty much a break even running the AC. And then in the winter, we still produce a little bit of electricity with the panels. So I'm a big advocate. I would also say there are some great turbines out there. And actually, there's some vertical turbines that are becoming more common. Think of a barbershop
pole,
kind of pole that's spinning. And that's essentially what a turbine will look like. And that's something you might look at. Yeah.
All right, there we go. Thanks, Kenneth. Appreciate it. Well, our three guests, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build and Steve Schultz and Kendall Richards of All Comfort Services in Madison are going to be with us up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking home improvement and especially heating, cooling, and ventilating. Chad Spate back with us, owner of Chad's Design Build. Joining him today from All Comfort Services in Madison are Steve Schultz and Kendall Richards. Steve's the field coach, 25 years of experience. Kendall's been president of the company for the past 15 years. So what questions do you have about your heating or cooling system or ventilating? Are you concerned about air quality? Give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Pete in Wales, Wisconsin. We'll give you a chance now. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I'd like to just ask you about my attic vents, my attic insulation. I presently have two layers of 6-inch bath, so I only have 12 inches of insulation. I need more. That's obvious. But I have heard that that blown-in insulation is not to be used in connection with batting. Do you know anything about that?
Okay. Chad, go ahead. We'll give you a chance.
Sure. There isn't necessarily a problem with adding blown-in insulation on top of the batting, but what I would recommend would be, I don't know if you've ever had a blower door test done on your home, but that would help to indicate how well air-sealed the attic is. And you would want to air seal prior to putting in the loose fill, because right now someone could poke around and detail the areas where there might be light fixtures and other penetrations through walls to air seal in and around the fiberglass batting. But the more insulation you have up there, the harder it is to do that well. And then once you've air sealed it, adding an additional layer of the cellulose or the loose fill, will help to provide you with more comfort. And if you can only afford to do one of those things, doing the air sealing will really improve the performance of the insulation you've already got.
And where would he go? I mean, who would he see? What kind of person or what kind of company would be something like Steve and Kendall's or somebody else? Or
well, so typically there are some insulation companies that that do provide the a home performance evaluation, and we'll do a blower door test, and we'll check to see, you know, what is really going on and what opportunity there might be to air seal the home. It's very unusual to find properly air sealed homes, to be quite honest. I mean, it's not something that is done consistently well. But if it has been done, that's great to figure that out. And then you can put your money into adding that additional cellulose. And then the only other thing I just always want to mention, I didn't catch how old your home is, but if it is a, you know, 100-year-old home, I would, you know, make sure that there isn't any old knob and tube wiring in the structure before you do any of this work, because that becomes a hazard as we're adding insulation.
Yeah, good points. Pete, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Carl in Barneveld, your turn. Hi, Carl.
Yeah, I just tuned in late, but I heard the comments about the small wind and the vertical axis turbines. And from all my readings on that, both of those are just throwing money away, especially the vertical axis turbines. Solar panels are economically viable, but I would like to have whichever guest was recommending the vertical axis turbines and the even any small wind turbine. I mean, the maintenance costs are just huge. And to say where he's finding any information that is a viable solution for reducing your costs. And I'll take the response off the air. Thank you.
All right. I think, Chad, you were the one talking about wind turbines.
Yeah, I did. I hopefully haven't gotten myself into trouble here. I just, you know, I simply was mentioning that it's a growing technology. You know, we haven't installed it anywhere yet. It is becoming something that someone might be able to consider on a single family residence, depending on the circumstances. And I was simply mentioning it if solar were not a option, that there can, you know, because you can have wooded lots that really just don't have viable solar opportunities. Depending again on the location, it is possible that some of these turbines, they are starting to become something that a homeowner might consider. But it is a technology that is seeing a lot of advancement. All of the various greener renewable energy production options, you know, every 5 years we're improving by leaps and bounds right now. And so I try to keep an open mind to what's coming out there on the market. But it's a good point. We have to be cautious.
Karen in New Berlin emailed. She's wondering, does closing off all or either partially or completely the heat vents and or air returns, does that put stress on the furnace, motor, or fan? Let's say you want a room, you know, one room or a couple of rooms, you just close them off. This is not for an unused room, but for areas that are kind of routinely occupied. Should vent just be left open for the most efficient running of the HVAC? Steve, what do you think?
I would never recommend closing off any returns or supplies. You've got the envelope of the house, which is insulated and sealed, and that's your barrier to the outside. So we start closing things off. Now we're trying to move that barrier, the envelope, to the inside walls, which are not insulated and they're not taken care of. So I personally, it does add some stress, no doubt, to the blower, but I think it makes a bigger performance, from comfort and things like that. Your savings are not going to add up anywhere near to what you lose in comfort and really taking care of your structure. Wouldn't you think, Chad?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so there's nothing wrong with doing some balancing if you find that, you know, you're blowing too much air in one room versus another. But I think generally, you know, beyond that, I would agree.
All right. Rod emailed from the Driftless area. He's designing a new garage detached from the house. It'll be a two-story garage, and he plans to put solar panels on the roof to provide heating through hot water in the floor. Due to the design, he says, I'm going to have concrete floors on both stories. What type of ventilation and or air conditioning should be put in with that? Or what should he pair up with it? That's a good question.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think I understand where he's going. So using the solar, having a small electric boiler and doing the heat through the radiant, the key with that always with everything is making sure you're insulating really well under that slab, around the whole perimeter, all the way up. If you're doing concrete above, if that's going to be a spancrete or something like that, if they've got hollow cells in them, that heat is going to go right to the end of that. So, again, you need to really make sure you're sealing all of that up. I've seen a number of situations where garages have places underneath for storage or something like that, and they use spancrete, and then they're wondering why they're growing tulips in January outside their garage wall. So you have to be really careful. As far as cooling goes, in lieu of a boiler, you could throw a little heat pump in there and do hot water and chilled water and try to cool that way. Again, I wouldn't recommend it necessarily in a garage because you'd have to really control that dew point. You'd probably have to put some central dehumidification in to keep the dew point down so that you didn't condense. But otherwise, depending on the space, you might just consider a small sleeve unit, a little PTEC or a sleeve unit for air conditioning only. And it'd probably do the job if you're just coming and going and it's a hobby thing and you're not living out there, you're not sleeping there, you just want to condition a little bit here and there, spot cooling. You know, a small sleeve unit would probably do it.
Okay. Dave in Lone Rock, we'll go to you. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Good afternoon, whatever. I've got a question. My furnace is a Duquesne, it's about 17 years old. And in the last couple of years, I would have to set it at the thermostat at about 75 to get it to keep up to about 62, 63 degrees. And the guy who was coming out to check my furnace just kept saying that I needed to use a lower MERV rating on my filter. And finally this year, the inducer motor went out on it. Could that have been the problem versus too high of a MERV rating on my filters?
The inducer motor going out is that's a failure, mechanical failure. It wouldn't have had, I don't think, anything to do with the previous issues, but having a real thick, dense filter that's not allowing that air through, your furnace is just going to cycle unlimited. It's probably never going to run long enough to satisfy a thermostat. A thermostat's calling for heat, but there's safeties in those furnaces. If it's not moving enough air and it's getting too warm in there, it's going to shut off on a safety, on a limit switch, a high limit switch. And that limit switch was probably acting like your thermostat, if you will. And I think he's probably pretty accurate. If the filter was restricting the air that much, and it's probably a function of the size of the ductwork and everything that's feeding the filtering, feeding the warm air on the discharge side, but he's probably pretty accurate.
On to Dave, thanks again. On to Marianne in Superior. Hi, Marianne.
Hi there. Yeah, the reason I'm calling is I live in an apartment complex, and when the heating season starts, I find myself vacuuming copious amounts of dust. It's sounds like it's a forced air. And can you tell me anything about that?
So forced air systems, they move air, and if you've got dust in the air, that's going to be moved around. The furnace and ductwork don't produce any dust. They just move what's there. So when you first start it up, anything that's built up is going to move through the system, and you'll find that on tabletops and that type of thing. Again, a better filtration system would be something I would look at. If you're getting that throughout the whole heating season, certainly a much better filtration system, but you might want to look and see what's the source of that. If you do a lot of hobbies, if you a lot of sewing, craft type work, there's probably something to what's creating that dust to begin with.
And in an apartment situation like she's in, there could be that dust. Could that be coming from another apartment, for example, or what's going on in other apartments in the building?
It'd be interesting to know if they're dedicated units for each apartment or if there's one central system that's serving a lot of different apartments. I doubt that that's the case, but if it is, they're probably also bringing in quite a bit of ventilation, some fresh air for ventilation. And the location of that fresh air intake could be critical, too. If it's someplace where people mow and other things are going on there, it's collecting things from outside and we're not filtering it properly, that certainly could be working its way through the system. But my guess would be in an apartment that they're for fire ratings and things like that, it's probably a dedicated system. But there might still be a little fresh air coming in. And, I guess I would look and see, is that air being filtered again? What type of a filter is there? And can we improve the filtration?
Thanks for that question, Mary Ann. Kenneth in Pewaukee, your turn. Hi, Kenneth.
Yeah, back to that idea I had about an all-electric house. We have two air conditioning units in it. For the upstairs, there's a separate air conditioning unit in the attic, and it is defunct. And I'm wondering if there is a good type of way to air condition once again. All we have to work with is a hatch, an attic hatch that's, I don't know, 24 by 20 or whatever. Is there a good air conditioning unit that a person could put in to have? The rooms are all ducted. There's four bedrooms up there. But is there a good air conditioner that can be installed in a small space?
Yeah, I think they're probably, tricky.
Steve? Yeah, the different manufacturers have different sizes. So what's up in that attic is an air handling system. It's a blower and coil combination, and they have different sizes physically as well as capacity. So capacity to cool is probably, a big part of that. We have to find out how much cooling you need, then find the smallest box that's available to fit up there. And it can be a challenge. There's no doubt about it. But I think, again, having a good contractor come out, somebody you trust, and taking a look at it, depending on what you say is defunct, if it's just the outdoor unit, you may be able to replace that without doing much of the inside. But we really like to change out the whole system so you get the full benefit of all the efficiencies, the noise levels, all of that type of stuff. So that would be our recommendation.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Kenneth. Dave in Rhinelander. Hello.
Hello. I'm glad you got to fit me in here. I've got a low pitch roof and there's a stack vent and a bathroom vent on the roof. And I get snow melt and then the ice dam forms. I'm wondering how you handle a bathroom vent that's sitting flush on a low pitch roof. And if the snow melting around the stack vent indicates there's heat coming out or just heat in the house is warming the pipe and that melts the snow, and if there's something you can do about that.
Yeah, thanks for the call. It's a great question. I mean, so typically the gases coming out of the plumbing system, they are warmer than the outside air. And so it's not unusual to see some snow melting around that pipe. And it's a good idea if it seems to be persistent, and if you are seeing any ice damming, some adhesive underlayment when the roof is redone, or if the roof needs to be repaired, can be put in those areas in anticipation of the inevitable snow melt that will occur around those vents. but it's not anything to be concerned about. If it's properly flashed and if the you do mention that it's a low slope roof, and so you know, if it's too low of a slope, anything less than a 312 pitch is not appropriate for certain types of roofing material, you know, and that would be another conversation to talk about. But as far as snowmelt goes, that doesn't concern me. I think you probably don't need to worry about it.
Corrine emailed from Madison. She has a newly purchased 1952 home, 850 square feet of forced air heat, but no air conditioning. What's involved in fitting the house with central? Is a new furnace needed as well, a new gas or natural gas rather? Steve, what do you think?
Well, I would suggest having a good comfort consultant coming out and taking a look at it, and they'll help make that determination. They'll give you good advice, depending on the age, again, of the furnace. If it's a newer furnace, probably not. But if there's things that have to be changed to fit the air conditioning in there, and we're going to be doing some things anyway that would have to be done twice if you were doing a furnace later, it may make sense to change them both at the same time. And but a good person to come out there and do an audit for you, take a look at it, they'll be able to give you some real good advice.
Yeah, there we go. Dave emailed to ask if about energy audits. Do private companies do those as well? I mean, yeah, for sure.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, most of the consultants are, you know, private one-person entrepreneurs that are, you know, they're getting certified through the Focus on Energy program to be an evaluator, but then they are going out and they're determining what they're charging for their services, and then they perform the service and provide a report. And then, you know, typically the work is done independent of that. And I had mentioned that there are some insulation companies that will also provide those services and kind of be able to both diagnose and then actually do the work. And sometimes that's, you know, the best way to go, because then it's a one-stop shop.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, we are out of time. Chad, Steve, and Kendall, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Steve Scholes, and Kendall Richards of All Comfort Services in Madison. Great to have them with us, and hopefully we can talk about this again. A lot of good, really good questions. Appreciate all the good questions, as a matter of fact. Garden Talk coming up tomorrow. We'll talk companion planting for vegetable gardens, and then at noon we'll take a look at growing your own spices. Full disclosure, by the way, Chaz Design Build is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, and we appreciate that as well. Thank you so much for listening, and hey, please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.